Galatians 6, verse 1 to 10. It's on page 1172 on the Bibles on the tables or on the chairs. And I'm just going to read that for us. It goes like this. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else, for each one should carry their own load. Nevertheless, the one who receives instruction in the word should share all good things with their instructor. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh, from the flesh will reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. That's where we're going to be this week. I want to explore what it means for the church to be family. For the church to be a family of believers, as it's described there. Well, what does it look like for the church to be that? I want to start by asking you a question, which is, let's see if I have any more joy with this week. Yeah, I do. Who could tell me, does anyone recognize this picture? Ah, oh, there we go. Yeah, I knew there'd be some people here who would recognize it. Now, as you look at that, you might think, that looks like a rubbish child's birthday party. Or, you know, a better than average. I don't know, depending on what your child's birthday party experiences have been. But you might look at that and think, that's just a rubbish children's birthday party. But actually, what it is some pictures from something that happened earlier this year called the Willy Wonka Experience. Okay, so when you see that, I'm sure that's what first sprang to mind. This is a Willy Wonka experience. Now, just for the record, this experience was described as a massive immersive experience. Do you currently feel immersed as you see this warehouse and the bouncy castle? It was described as the place where chocolate dreams become reality. Okay, I hope you're seeing it right now. We promised an enchanted garden, a twilight tunnel, an imagination lab, surprises at every turn. Now I've got a few more pictures. This was I think kind of where you went into it. So maybe you're feeling a little bit more there, or maybe not. And then this is probably the one picture that made the news most. Was the Oompa Loompa, who I think this was the imagination lab. It looks more like a meth lab. It's kind of a slightly terrifying, she's not having a good time. I'm not sure any kid who's there is having a good time. Why did I start with this? Well, because my hope and prayer as we have gone through this series is that we would, as we explore what it looks like to be a church, we become inspired and equipped to be that community. And one of the most common ways the Bible talks about is this idea of family. And as I was thinking about that, and thinking about what do people experience when they walk through the doors on a Sunday here? You know, what do people experience when they come along to a life group? What do people experience when they meet someone from Grace Church? It just got me thinking a little bit about what did the people experience when they turned up at Willy Wonka exhibition. You know, when people come here, when they start engaging with Grace Church, do they go, oh, actually, this is a community of people who function a bit like a family? Is that what they see? Is that what they experience? Or is it a bit like the Willy Wonka experience, where this description doesn't really reflect the reality? And one of the reasons I've been thinking about this is because a few years ago, I remember having a conversation with Ellie Cook, friend of Grace Church Hartlepool. Some of you will know her. She works down in London in a church down there. She was in Newcastle for a while. And we were talking a little bit about what it means for church to be family. And she was talking about how she'd experienced that. And one of the things she said was she found it really difficult when she would be, I don't know, invited round to someone's house or something would be due to happen. And then they'd kind of rearrange or cancel because they had some responsibilities for their family. And the thing she said, which has stuck with me so much, was she said she'd end up thinking at that point, but I thought you said I was your family. And it just stuck with me when she said it. You know, if we're going to go around saying to people, oh, we're a family, this is how we function like a family, what if people actually took us at our word? What if people actually believed it when we said it? That they actually believed, oh, wait a minute, when I say that as a church we're a family, I'm going to treat you as if you're my family. I'm going to expect that you treat me as if I'm part of your family. What if people did that? You see, Ellie's experience was that there's this risk that you're promised one thing like the Willy Wonka experience. You're promised an immersive experience. You promised this family. But the reality is just a very stripped back imitation. It's not even close. I've got to be honest. I don't remember many conversations I had. This was probably 5 years ago. But that conversation has stuck with me. It's one of those conversations that I often come back to when I'm thinking about what are we actually trying to do at Grace Church? I can think of very few things that have challenged me more than that conversation in the past few years. And the challenge is obvious, right? Every church, or most churches, describe themselves as a family. You don't have to be around loads of churches to hear the church trotting out this word, oh, we're a family here. We're a family at this church, at that church, or whichever church. We'll have used it many times at Grace Church. We can throw around the word almost without thinking about it. But what if someone did take you at your word? What if someone said, great, I'm family, so can I come on your family holiday? Can I just drop in whenever I feel like? Can I have a key to your house? When other things crowd in, am I still going to be a priority or am I going to be the first thing that gets dropped? And suddenly, I've got to be honest, I felt much more nervous describing Grace Church as a family. It made me think, oh, wait a minute. If I'm going to say this, I've A, got to be very clear about what I mean by it. What do I actually mean when I'm describing Grace Church as a family? And then perhaps more critically, I've actually got to be willing to live it out. If I'm going to say it, I've got to be willing to live it. If we as a church, at Grace Church, are going to say, look, one of the ways that God describes us is a family of believers, then we've got to actually be willing to go, okay, so we're going to live this out. And so today the plan is to look at one of my favorite passages, Galatians 6, verse 1 to 10, and think about what this tells us about what it means for Grace Church to be a family. And we're going to start right at the beginning, so if you've got it open before you, it will help you. We're going to start with the first three words. It begins like this, brothers and sisters. Now, I don't want to push this too hard, but I just want to reflect on the fact that that is the most common way Christians refer to each other in the New Testament. By far the most common phrase, brothers and sisters. Yeah, fellow Christians are described as friends sometimes. The relationship is sometimes described in other terms, other family terms. But the most common is brothers and sisters. It's the most common phrase that's used when a Christian is talking about another Christian. And I assume that the reason it's the most common way it's referred to is because it's a helpful way of us thinking about what our relationship should look like. I assume that's why they use it so much. Because brothers and sisters is interesting because it says that when the Bible says we're family, what it doesn't mean is like distant family. You know, he doesn't start this by going, you know, third cousin, second removed, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's not the family he's got in mind here. He's got in mind brothers and sisters, close family. It's not distant family, we're brothers and sisters. But it's also interesting because brothers and sisters are not, to take a different picture, husbands and wives. Their relationship is more separate than that. They don't, when they're older, they don't normally share the same house or their money or raise children together. And as I said, I don't want to overpush this point, but I do think it's significant that the picture is primarily brothers and sisters. And I found it helpful in trying to ensure that viewing the church as family is actually more than words, whilst acknowledging that it is simply not possible for me to invite everyone in Grace Church on my family holiday. Similarly, it's not possible for me to include everyone in Grace Church in the decisions I make. Some people I've only just met. Some of you I'm meeting for the first time this week. You see, I think it's just helpful to think, okay, what's the relationship? The relationship is primarily brothers and sisters. Close, but maybe not completely intertwined. And I'm not saying that solves all the problems of what does it actually look like. I think there's still some difficult things to work through. And I'm not saying that it makes it easy to do. I know there are many times when I fail to really treat my church family like that. I know there's loads of occasions where wisdom and prayer and Christian counsel is needed to try and work out what does it look like in this situation to treat this person like my family. But I do think it's a helpful starting point. Start with that picture, brothers and sisters. That's who we are. Start thinking along those terms. Start working out, well, how would I treat someone who is my brother and sister in this situation? And that will help you get started. But anyway, I want to press on. I want to look at a few things that Galatians 6 says after introducing the brothers and sisters. I don't know if you've seen, I've put it up there, but I don't know if you've seen those kind of signs that say, in this family, we, dot, dot, dot. Like, maybe some of you have them. I have one. I'll be honest. I find them a little bit sanctimonious and smug, so I tend to not really like them very much. But we do have one. And the reason we have one is primarily because at the bottom of it, the one that we have says, we do loud really well. And if there is anything that I feel sums up our household, it's that phrase. Like, that is a fair description of what our household looks like. Well, here in Galatians 6, I think we get something that looks a little bit like a biblical kind of version of what does church as family look like. In this family, we will do certain things. And so I just want to pick out, I think I've got five, but if I've miscounted, I apologize. We're just going to work through it bit by bit. Okay, in this family, we, start at the beginning, verse 1, restore one another gently. You see, because we're brothers and sisters, we have a responsibility to each other when one of us is caught in sin. Now, the Bible uses the word sin in slightly different ways. Sometimes sin is used to describe actions we do that are contrary to what God has commanded. Anytime we fail to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, that would be sin. Anytime we fail to love another person as we love ourselves, that would be sin. Sometimes the Bible uses sin to talk about that. But the Bible also uses sin in another way. It uses the word sin to talk about as a power which enslaves us. To take the language here, it's the thing that catches us. You know, you're caught in sin. It catches us and it enslaves us. And the question is, how are we to respond when that's what we see going on in and around the church that we're a part of? What are we meant to do in our family when we see someone being caught by sin? Well, Paul says we should respond like a family would. Imagine someone in your family has a really short temper. That might be harder for some of you than others, but imagine someone has a really short temper and they repeatedly sin by losing their temper with people in the family. How should you respond to that if you find yourself in that family situation? Well, you shouldn't just ignore it, right? You shouldn't just go, oh, well, that's just what they're like. You shouldn't do that because that's not good for them. But it also impacts the whole family. The whole family suffers because of this person's short temper. So you can't just ignore it and say, oh, well, it doesn't matter. That wouldn't be good for them. It wouldn't be good for the family. You have to do something about it. But also, because you're family, you can't just go, oh, we'll just kick them out. You know, we'll just get rid of them. We'll just have nothing to do with them. You can't do that because they're family. So you can't ignore it and you can't just get rid of them. You can't just separate off. So what should you do? Well, here's what you should do, according to Paul. Out of love, you should seek to restore them gently. You should help them to deal with their anger, to help them learn self-control and patience and kindness and gentleness. And you should do it gently because you're not doing it because you're so frustrated with this person. You're doing it because you love them and you love the family that you're in and you want the good of them and the good of the family. It's worth noting, just if you look at the end of verse 1 in front of you, Paul does warn that it can sometimes go the other way. You might start with the intention of restoring the other person, but there's a risk that instead of restoring them, we end up getting caught by sin ourselves. But again, why is this? Well, this happens because we're family. Your sin impacts me, and there is a danger that I end up tempted to do the same things, which is again a reason why we can't just ignore it. So we have to watch ourselves. As I interact with this, am I gently restoring this person or am I becoming tempted to the same sin? Am I normalizing sin? Am I getting caught in the same patterns? Because sin is a reality in every family, then sin is a reality in every church. And therefore, it really matters what are we going to do with it. If we ignore it and just put up with it, the family suffers. If we divide and separate and say, well, I'm not going to have anything to do with that person and they're not going to have anything to do with me, the family suffers. No, for the good of the family, we always, out of love and with gentleness, seek to address sin and restore each other. That's what it means to be a family. Let's keep going. Here's my second in this family we. In this family, we carry each other's burdens. That's where it goes in verse 2. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. This is just what loving families do for each other. Think about how your family might operate. When one person is snowed under by work, the family steps up to offer childcare or to pick up some of the housework or to offer some downtime. Where someone in the family is facing financial struggles, the family gathers round to think, how can we help? Where someone in the family is ill, the rest of the family care for them. This is what loving families do. Loving families carry each other's burdens because we know it doesn't just always function on a flat level. Sometimes one person's snowed under and the family has to step up to support them. There are times in life where burdens are too heavy to carry alone, and we need people around us to help us carry them. Maybe a few years ago, we did a discussion group, which has stuck with me on the question of why is life so overwhelming? And we talked about lots of things. You know, why is it that so many people feel so overwhelmed by life at the moment? We talked about loads of different things in it. I think there's lots of factors at play in that. Some of it's about expectations. Some of it is about kind of the kind of pressure we put on ourselves. But one of the things that struck me during that is maybe life feels so overwhelming to us because we're trying to do things alone that were never intended to be done alone. Imagine you're trying to carry a weight that was meant to be carried by two people, you're always going to feel pretty stressed by that. It's going to be too heavy. You're always going to feel weighed down by it. You see, there's just some things in life we're never meant to be dealt with by an individual person. And if you try to, your life is going to feel incredibly overwhelming. So maybe one of the reasons why life is so overwhelming is not because life is any more overwhelming, because I actually don't think it is. All the metrics seem to show that it's not. But maybe it's because as we become more isolated, we're just simply trying to do more things by ourselves that we're never going to be things that we could carry alone. Now, because church is a family, this is a role that we now take up for each other. We carry each other's burdens. Now, what does this look like? It could look like any number of things. It might look like cooking meals or having people around or looking after kids or giving people a lift or fixing a garage door or whatever. But I just want to talk about one thing that the New Testament shows it clearly did look like in the early church. There's kind of one way that is pulled out twice in Acts where we're told that churches carried each other's burdens. And it says it's something like this. People in churches sold their possessions in order to share them with those in need. Twice in Acts you'll see that told. I just want you to hear how radical a carrying each other's burdens that is. This is not, oh, I've got a bit of money spare left over, I'll help you out. This is, I'm going to go and sell something so that I can help you out, so that I can provide for somebody who's in need. This is the kind of thing a family might do. You know, someone in the family is struggling, and the family come together and go, okay, how as a family can we help out this brother, this sister? But is it something a church does? Well, it's something the New Testament church did. We know they did because we're told that they did. There are loads of ways that I can already see some of this playing its way out in the life of Grace Church. I can see people carrying each other's burdens. However, it did make me think about this question of people who are struggling with financial hardships. Are we providing for people in the church who are facing financial hardships in the way that a family would? Or in the way that the New Testament church clearly did? Here's a suggestion I'm going to make. You can ignore it if you so wish, but I think it could be helpful. Here's a suggestion I'm going to make. This is the bank account for Grace Church Hartlepool. I want all your money. No, I don't. We never talk about money, really, at Grace Church. But here's my suggestion. That if this is something you would like to do, if you go, hey, I would like to be financially providing for people in need, why don't you go home, prayerfully consider, is there some money I could give to that? And then just when you send it through, reference it with hardship funds. And we as church leaders will distribute it out to people who are in need in Grace Church. I personally think that would be a great thing for us to do as a church. I think that's what it looks like to be family. I think it looks like to go, hey, some of us, we have some money we could give. We could help provide. And we could give this to people in our church family who are struggling with financial difficulties at the moment. I think that's a thing we could do. As always, if you're a visitor here, I'm not really talking to you. You do what you want with your money. And if you're part of Grace Church, go home, pray about it, think about it. It's entirely up to you. But I think this could be a helpful way that we could go about going, what would it look like for us as a church to take seriously the call to be a family that carries each other's burdens? So there you go. There's a thought and an idea. Let's keep going. Okay, let's see where we go from here. Look down at verse 3 with me. We're going to go to verse 3 next. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Here's where I think he goes from this, and I think it makes sense, really. It's this. It's that we shouldn't think, in this family, we don't think too highly of ourselves. In fact, to take the point even further, he says we should avoid comparing ourselves to other people. Look at verse 4. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. We have a saying in our house, which Sarah and I kind of roll out every now and again. I'm sure we didn't come up with it. I have no idea where we read it or heard it or whatever, but it came from somewhere, I'm sure. But we will often remind each other that comparison is the thief of joy. It's just a thing we say in our house. Comparison is the thief of joy. And if I'm honest, as much as I have to remind my children of that, I have to remind myself of it. As human beings, we seem obsessed with comparing ourselves to each other. I feel envious when someone preaches a better sermon than me. I feel insecure when I feel like people prefer that person's company to my company. I feel smug when I do better than someone else at something. I boast about how I've succeeded where others have failed. And all of this is ridiculous, it's pointless, it makes no sense. My sermon is no better or worse whether someone preached a better or worse one before or after. It's still exactly the same. It makes no difference to what I did, to whether that was good or bad. People enjoy my company no more or less, depending on how much they enjoy someone else's company. Comparing ourselves to other people just turns everything into a competition. And it prevents us from loving and enjoying each other and enjoying each other's achievements. But I want to think about how different that is in a loving, functional family. Back to this family idea. That's not how families interact. Like, when someone does well in my family, I don't go, but I actually do it better. Well, at least, you know, you have the competitive dad thing. Sometimes you do. But like, generally, that's not how we respond. Generally, when someone in the family does well at something, I'm not thinking, oh, well, how well did I do compared to them? I'm just thinking, isn't it great that they did well at that thing? I'm enjoying their success. Rather than desperately trying to be better than other people in my family, I should be able to find joy in their achievements and to press on with what I need to do. Let's be clear. So many churches are torn apart because people think too highly of themselves. Constantly comparing themselves to each other. And in this family, what are we going to do? We're going to pursue self-forgetfulness and humility. We're not going to think about ourselves too much, and we're going to be humble in the way we view ourselves. Let's keep going. What else are we going to do in this family? Mal, I might need you to click it. Seems to have given up. Thanks. We're not going to freeload. Look at verse 5 with me. For each one should carry their own load. Now, do you see how strange that seems in this section? It seems really odd, doesn't it? Because he's literally just a few verses before said, we should carry each other's burdens. So wait a minute. We should carry each other's burdens, but everyone should carry their own load. Well, which one is it? Should we be carrying our own load, or should we be carrying each other's burdens? Which one should we be doing? And the answer is, of course, both. We've all seen, maybe been part of, families where somebody is freeloading. They basically loll around doing nothing whilst everyone else does everything for them. They don't cook, they don't clean, they don't contribute financially. That is not the Bible's vision for family. And it's not the Bible's vision for church. Because it's not good for anyone. It doesn't help the person who's freeloading, as they often end up lethargic, unfocused, lazy, and depressed. And it doesn't help the family around them, who end up stressed and resentful and anxious. You see, this is the vision for family that Paul gives here. We all do our own fair share. We carry our loads, knowing that there will be times when our loads are more than we can carry alone, and that we have people around us to help us carry them then. And there will be times where our load is a little lighter, and we can help others carry their loads. That's how a functional, loving family would work, right? That's what Paul's describing here. I've got one more, and then I'm going to try and wrap this up. Just to the end, verse 6. He says that we, those who receive the word, should share the word, or share the fruits of the word. Nevertheless, the one who receives instruction in the word should share all good things with their instructor. The shape of a family is hugely shaped by who we listen to. So if you think about what you value in your family, you might say, oh, well, I've always thought a family should function like this because that's how I was brought up. What are we there saying? Well, we're saying that the things we heard and observed in our parents has influenced what we think a good, loving, functional family should look like. Similarly, our view of family will be shaped by all other influences, books we've read. You know, you might have read a really good book on it. It might have been influenced by media you've come across, things you've listened to, TV, kind of visions of families you've seen on TVs. And so our families look quite different depending on who we've listened to. Well, this family is a family that's shaped by the Word. We're shaped by what God says. There are family rules. These provide the principles of all our interactions. We're shaped by the Word, so we forgive each other just as we've been forgiven, because that's what God calls us to do. We're shaped by the Word, so we tell the truth, even when we feel like lying would be more convenient. We're shaped by the Word, so we spend time worshiping God rather than worshiping ourselves. We receive the Word, we read it, meditate on it, study it, listen to talks on it, and then we share the Word. We talk about it, apply it, and wrestle with it together. You want to know what a biblical vision of a family, the church of the family, looks like? I think Galatians 6 is a great place to go, a great place to start just unpicking. What would it look like for us to really be a family? But I want you to imagine that, going back to where we started, Willy Wonka experience, I want you to imagine that you rock up to the Willy Wonka experience, but what you are expecting is the actual chocolate factory from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You know, genuine rivers of chocolate, actual real-life Oompa Loompas, like bubble gum that's every flavor and that never runs out. My knowledge of the book is quickly failing me at this point. Other things that exist in that book. Imagine that's what you're expecting. I'll tell you what's going to happen if that's what you're expecting. You're going to be disappointed. Doesn't matter how good the experience is. The experience could be the greatest Willy Wonka experience that has ever existed, but you're still going to be disappointed because it's never going to be that. It could have a great set and great actors and fun rides and all sorts, but the problem is you were expecting something which was impossible, and so it could never possibly be that. I just want to suggest the same is true of the church. If you come into Grace Church and you expect it to be the church equivalent of the Kellogg's family, full of people who are gentle with each other, who don't give up on people, who bear each other's burdens, who are humble, who aren't out for what they can get, who obey the Bible perfectly, I just want to be honest with you, you're going to be disappointed. If you come to Grace Church and you expect to find in it a family where you will always feel loved and always feel accepted and never feel judged and always cared for and never hurt or ignored or sinned against, again, you're going to be disappointed, because that sort of family does not exist this side of heaven. We're not going to be there. If you're thinking about your experience of Grace Church and saying, look, you don't live up to that, of course we don't. We're not going to this side of heaven. One day, we will live up to that. And I can't wait for that day. But that's not today. So we're not going to be this completely. But just like the Willy Wonka experience, the church has to bear some resemblance to it, right? You've got to be at least in the same ballpark. You can't just put up a bouncy castle and claim to be Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. And in the same way, you can't just get together on a Sunday, sing a few songs, listen to a talk, and then claim to be a family. It's not even close. If we are going to aim to be the kind of family Paul says we are, if we're going to claim to be that kind of family, then we have to actually be willing to live it out. If you are new to Grace Church, if this is kind of, you haven't been around long and you're still just sizing it up and working out what you make of us, and you hear this description of what the church is meant to be and you think, well, that's not been my experience of Grace Church, I guess I just want to say, I'm sorry. Like, we're still learning and we're still growing and we're still sinning. and we still need forgiveness. We want to grow in this area. We want to be more like this. We're not there yet. And it's hard. We find it hard to do. But we also believe that God gives us his Spirit and that we have each other. And so as a church, we'll keep pushing for it. But I'm sorry if that's not what you've experienced here at Grace Church. If you are a part of Grace Church and you've listened through this whole series on the church, I just want to leave you just wondering how you've reacted to it. Like, what have you made of it? Maybe, as you've heard it, you've thought, actually, I'm not sure that is the kind of church I really want. It all sounds a bit much. Sounds a bit over the top. I was kind of more after a church which functioned a bit like a preaching center or a singing center or a spiritual center. You know, I just want to turn up for my weekly dose of religion, just as you go to the supermarket for your weekly shop or the gym for a workout. Now, many churches might function like that, but I just want to say I don't think that's really a church according to any New Testament definition of it. And because of that, that's just not a service we offer. If that's the kind of church you're looking for, that's not what we're offering. No, if you're a part of us, we're going to keep encouraging you to be the family the New Testament says the church should be. And I'm aware that in a culture where we're constantly being warned against overcommitting, where we always want to keep free and chill and all our options open, I'm aware that this vision of the church as family can feel a little bit suffocating for people. I know that that's how it can feel. But I think it's worth it, despite how hard and how suffocating it can at times feel, because our identity as human beings is found in community, and therefore our identity as Christians is found in the church. Your fondest memories and your deepest joys are connected to other people. And somewhere in each of us, there is this deep longing to be loved perfectly like a bride, to have connections with people that are so deep that when we suffer, they suffer, that when we rejoice, they rejoice. To be part of a family where we love one another and care for one another. If through this series you found yourself warming to that vision, you've gone, man, I would love to be part of a community like that. I'd love to be part of the community that's described as the bride of Christ and a body and a family. If that's something that when you're sat there you think, yeah, that's what I want, I just want to encourage you, start where you are. Like, sell the vision for this by modeling the vision yourself. Don't become a pain to everyone else in Grace Church telling us everything that we're doing wrong. I'm sure we're doing loads wrong. Don't despair at how far short of this vision we fall. No, instead, become a blessing to those people around you. Start offering hospitality. Look for ways to show practical care. Drop in on people. And as you do this, not only will you experience some of the joys to be found in deep community, but you might also inspire and encourage some of those people around you to start doing the same. I am so thankful for the ways in Grace Church I experience what it is to have a family. And I pray that as we receive God's word, as we share God's word, we will, as Paul says here at the end, do good to all people, but especially to those that God has placed in our family. Let me pray.